There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 927, March 1st. 2022, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say rain in Spain remains the same. LCH at the top of the game. But he has a little loss of memory. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, the host is in tears as Alpine goes up in flames. LCH on top on day three. The Flying Hawaiian dies at 79, and I also want to remind everybody that we need your contributions. Keep this program up on the cloud. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Welcome to March Madness in Motorsports. This is the month we all have been waiting for. Formula One racing happening this month in a few weeks. And the WEC and the Sebring 12 hours nearby also happening in the merry month of March. And Mr. Rogers, very pleased to say, I took a day off on Friday and had a great three-day weekend at the races just across the little pond in St. Petersburg. This is a very nice place to visit, and cars going fast and turning right and left makes it even brighter. And on the other side of the Atlantico pond, in the land of machismo and gazpacho, cars were also going rapido and turning right and left. And these were Formula One cars. Have you been enjoying the action, sir, on both sides of the ocean?
Yes, it's been very, very exciting. And it's been almost too much for my ticker at times.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, 20 Mona Lisas have completed their three-day shakedown, including one in the wet without the rain, which was once a zany-brainy idea put forward by Bernie Ecclestone that they should do that during a race without telling the teams and the drivers. As expected and as feared, it was Mercedes 1-2, Red Bull 3-4 when the first shakedown preseason testing was over. Since you're the annual Svengali of sandbagging, do you see a team holding back, or is there any truth in Dr. Marco diagnosing the Red Bull car is heavy? What say you?
Actually, I think everybody certainly was sandbagging. And, of course, the buzzword is now porpoising. And the porpoising is going to be a big porpoising problem. And I hope I'm correctly pronouncing porpoising for the entire industry. There you go. Not fun if you're experiencing porpoising down the straight.
Well, you sound funny, and this was the first time I had ever heard this word, and I don't know what they're talking about, but you know, we're going to find out pretty soon in just a few weeks who's got the package ready and who's got issues. But you know what, and you said about the Alpine in flames, will you please explain?
You mean the fire?
See.
Well, that pretty much ended Alpine's day. When you catch fire, it's not good.
Well, my favorite part was in one of the press conferences, Lewis Hamilton was asked what will happen if the team got the design concept wrong. And Sir Hamilton declared, "My team does not make mistakes." I say, oh dear, one silver team left him high and dry in the wet for a Shanghai surprise. and then the driver was left meowing in the kitty litter. Later on, the other silver team, which is his current team, brought him into the pits under a caution with only a few laps remaining of all the places near the Monte Carlo casino, and that was too much of a gamble and huff. Lewis and James Vowell may have forgotten that, but some of us do remember. Sir, do you expect close racing, pack racing, as the pundits were saying with the new rules and regulations and car designs? Or will this be another one lucky man show? What say you?
Well, I believe Fernando Alonso will be the unlucky man, but luckily the camping chair industry is booming. On the other hand, it was actually quite depressing at the end of the day. Looks like Hamilton's got that eighth title in the bag, and the cabinets are being precisely made as we speak.
Okay, next we go to, this is very disappointing, fallout from the Russia-Ukraine fighting, which is very sad. War in the 21st century is very disheartening, to say the least. The FIA will allow Russian drivers to compete in international racing under the FIA flag, so Nikita Mazepin may have some chance. Possible big loser is Haas F1. The rich energy debacle did not make them poor, but losing sponsorship from Uralkali, company headed by Nikita Mazepin's Papito, will hurt quite a bit. Apparently, 20% of the team's budget was coming from Red Square. Next time you watch Netflix, Gunter Steiner may be on the Boss Gags program going, "Someone loan me a dime." And we will see how this thing, pans out. Let's hope the team is not running out of time. As always, Mr. Rogers, one man's misery is another man's glory. The way things are going, the Fittipaldi name may return to Formula One, because when you open the Nikita Russian doll, the first one to pop is Pietro Fittipaldi, who has been their reserve driver. And I met him last year at Sebring. Very nice kid and very polite, and I really enjoyed talking to him last year. I think Michael Andretti has already received a text from PDR asking why pay $200 million when you may be able to buy an F1 team from a fellow American for a fistful of rubles. Speaking of Michael and his unfinished business in Formula One, I am surprised some of the F1 familia are not too excited about such a legendary name gracing the Grand Prix grid in the near future. And given Mario's Italian heritage, I was expecting Engine to be badged with a Prancing Horse or Alfa Romeo, and he drove for both these teams in Formula One. The power for Mikey's team will come from Viry Châtillon, a.k.a. Alpine. Michael has a war chest of $200 million, and I think this will happen sooner or later. And now there are already reports that he may also run a Alpine sports car program. Do you have any inside line on that, Mr. Rogers, straight from Viry Châtillon?
Well, the paychecks haven't cleared yet, so we'll see what's going on. But my favorite is Toto Wolff coming out supporting the Andretti name and being all supportive. Not hilarious, very negative. And I guess Toto thinks you better bring $1 billion, because that's what it's going to take to compete with moi and my AMG staff. We're so bad to the bone that you'll be nipping the heels of Alfa Romeo for years. So, yeah, pretty funny stuff. Andretti, if it was me, save your money, stay home, stay out of trouble.
Well, it's what Toto has said is basically racing reality. And no matter which team Michael Andretti buys or starts, it's going to take 2-3 years to get going. And unless you have the backing of a major manufacturer, it's going to be slow boat to the harbor of Cherbourg. And I'm also surprised that, they're going with Alpine Renault engine. So I just don't see obviously, you're not going to have instant success in this day and age in Formula One, but I would love to see him buy an existing program like the Williams or the Sauber or even Haas operation. I think he can turn this thing around. This guy has been very successful in business. His IndyCar career was phenomenal. And of course, 1 year in Formula One cannot be used to define his whole life and achievements. So I'm very interested in seeing this program take off. And you know, in racing, the only business that is important is winning. And this guy is about winning, and so is his dad. I mean, you can see how excited Mario Andretti is. So that's all good. So it will be nice if he can have two American-owned teams and maybe three, four Formula One races here. That will be nice, especially for AARP members like you and I, where we may not have many years where we can keep flying thousands of miles to watch a race. So we'll see how it goes. Now, Mr. Rogers, speaking of the testing situation, Dusty used to say the look of love is in your eyes. What car and livery your eyes fancy now that we have seen some action shots of 2022 Formula One cars?
Two cars. The Alpine looks absolutely outstanding, and so does the Ferrari.
For me, the best looking car is definitely the Ferrari, and I think that's the general consensus. And at this time, the best livery is the Aston Martin. And I will not be surprised, because in racing, when somebody comes up with a cute idea for livery, you see copycats. I wouldn't be surprised if that racing, whatever it's called, you know, green is seen in racing shortly as other series also get going. So we'll see how it works out. Are we going to see any surprises in the second and final preseason testing in Bahrain?
Really, it all went fairly well until the porpoising situation became apparent. And once it was explained, I could understand why it's happening. It's a design flaw. The car loses downforce, then it comes back, it bounces back up, it goes back, and it's an oscillation of stop and go, and it's got to be terrible for the drivers. So I do hope they get through this quickly. Obviously, two teams will get through it quickly, will be Mercedes and Mercedes. And Max even said the car you see today is not what you will see in Bahrain when he's P2 on the grid. So they're expecting a completely redesigned car for Bahrain. At least Max is. Maybe he forgot to tell everybody at the team, but I think he was hinting there needs to be more chop chop if we're going to compete against the man that really supports the entire trophy cabinet building industry.
Yeah, and you know, obviously a lot of people, myself included, and this is just preseason shakedown testing, but I did not see any evidence on these 3 days that Lewis Hamilton is going to be half a second slower in qualifying and in race compared to his new teammate and whippersnapper, Mr. George Russell. But he was very, very close, that's for sure.
Yes, and I have a good game with cigars.
Do you think George Russell could be the new lucky man at Mercedes where he wins the first 3 races?
No, because unfortunately, because of what happened at the end of last year's F1 season, LCH is going to have a couple of chips on his shoulder. It could be Frito-Lay, we're not sure. But those chips are going to be great stuff. And unfortunately, Mr. Russell will be in the game. But it's going to be a lot of laughs, I'm telling you. I'll be laughing all day long. Unfortunately, Fernando will not be laughing. And he'll be planning his retirement and retirement party at the end of the season.
So I guess this bag of chips is going around the world now, which is good. But you know, I think what George Russell needs to do is do what Jenson Button did, because when he became teammate with Lewis, he won 2 races before Lewis got 1. So George Russell needs to pull a stunt like that. But I'm going to tell you something. If Lewis gets 3 or 4 wins before Russell gets 1, then Russell is going to be somewhere between England's cross between a Heckey and a Valtteri. You can't let people like Lewis get the jump on you. You got to hold them back right at the start, or they're gone to the races. But it's going to be, it's a very good situation. No.
Very good. Very good. And you got to feel the pain over at Valtteri Bottas camp.
So anything else you want to talk about, or shall we go into Motorsports Mondial?
I think we better take a break.
Hi, I'm David Coulthard, otherwise known as DC, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And the journey today, going around the world, starts with going across the Tampa Bay to St. Pete. And Mr. Rogers, you never walk alone when you are leaving the St. Petersburg Grand Prix street circuit for any cars. Friday, as I was walking back to the parking garage, I ran into ex-F1 and current IndyCar driver Marcus Ericsson. Surprisingly, he remembered me, and we had a brief chat. And I asked him if he remembers the interview he did with F1 Weekly when he was testing a GP2 car in Barcelona. And the next morning, this was done nighttime, his time. And the next morning, I got up, I had an email from Marcus requesting to re-record the interview, as he felt he was drunk during the first interview. He smiled and said, "Thanks for reminding me." And what's interesting, you know, I ran into his physiotherapist or his action man. And as I was talking to him, he says to me, my dad is I.A. Elk. And, you know, some of our listeners may know this name, I.A. Elk. He was racing in the 70s and 80s, did not make it to Formula One, but he was in Formula Two and also raced for many years in sports cars, raced at Le Mans, and also raced for quite a few years for Toyota in Japan. Now, stranger in the night on Saturday was Mr. Zach Brown. We did a walk-on by after saying hello and hi, and I did not know he was going to be here, which was kind of silly of me, especially with no Formula One race weekend going on. Next day, I contacted his PR guy, and, you know, the PR guy was very kind of him to respond to me right away, saying that his day, Zach's day, was booked, and I planned to attend the IndyCar race in Sweet Home, Alabama in April, and we'll try again. And I would like to give a shout-out to our friend and longtime listener and now a budding racing journalist himself, Mr. Christy Hardy. He was kind enough to give me some contact information, and also he gave me the contact info for the gentleman at Penske Racing. So hopefully one day I will get my wish to sit down and have a chat with Roger Penske. Obviously, it won't be for a half hour because we won't get that kind of time from him. But, you know, 10 minutes is all we ask, and we will see what happens. And one of these days, Mr. Rogers, you have to come to St. Petersburg Grand Prix. It's a fantastic event, beautiful place. It's very nice to, close to a very nice restaurant. On Friday, I had some mighty fine spicy Chinese food. Oh, yeah, that was good. So one of these days, we'll have to get you here. The race itself was won from pole by Penske driver Scott McLaughlin, or something like that, from New Zealand. This was win number 11 for Team Penske at the St. Pete Grand Prix. And one of our favorites, the Mighty Monty, won this race two times for Roger Penske. And Castro Neves has won this race three times for Captain, including the very first one held in 2006. NASCAR legend Jimmy Johnson remained a non-factor in his second race in St. Pete. JJ needs some serious band-aid. As they say on Wall Street, past performance is no guarantee of future results. He is having a career in IndyCars, like Danica did when she went to the France family fantasy land. JJ was a lap down at the end in 23rd place in a field of 26 cars. Can you imagine this from a guy who is racing for a very good team and who was seven-time NASCAR champion? His team is Ganassi Racing. I think Mr. Ganassi should really chip in a young American talent in that car, because that's a good ride. Somebody like Spencer Piggott or Oliver Askew. And if he wants to bring in from somebody from some other place, you know, bring in somebody who can win races with that. That's, I would say, front-running car, Pakhaj, that is now at the back of the bus operation, which is never good. But we have seen this movie before also in reverse, when Dario Franchitti went to NASCAR and went nowhere real fast. IndyCars and NASCAR, two very competitive series, but also two very different disciplines. Okay, now we go to Indy Light. This was very, very interesting. Do you remember Matthew Brabham, a son of Jeb Brabham, who raced here many years ago in this series? Well, he won the race. Andretti team had two cars that should have won the race. First, Hunter McElroy wrecked from the lead, and another Andretti driver, Christian Rasmussen, he ran out of gas while leading with two laps to go. And this was Matthew Brabham's first race in the top feeder series for IndyCars since 2015. Now, there are support races also. There was the Indy Pro 2000, which is like two steps below IndyCars. F1 Weekly friend Inam Ahmed, whose career we have been following from his championship-winning days in karting, he was second in the race on Friday, which was won by Josh Green from New York. And Inam was lying fourth in the second race, and unfortunately, he fought the wall, and the wall won. Inam, first race of the season on the podium. Your thoughts?
Very, very happy to be top three in the first race. I definitely had the potential to do pole. I had pole in the qualifying, but we got caught out by the red flag. And I was the quickest on track in the race, but unfortunately it's very difficult to pass here because it's a street circuit. But really happy to start the season like this, and also the team's given me a really good car, which I'm really, really happy about, and we kept it in one piece.
What are your chances for the championship, or how do you look at the championship fight?
I think I have a very high chance of winning as long as I keep my play my cards right, and I'm always there with my pace. I think, you know, every team has their good driver. I think the main guys are Foster and Exclusive, and Eves and Brickachek and Howard, and obviously my teammate Reese, and then a few little ones here and there. So it's tight, but it's good.
So we will keep an eye on him and other young talented drivers and see how they come through the system. And also, you know, talking of young talents, I did a couple of interviews. One was with Inam's teammate, a young kid from Miami, Reese Gold. I think he's a good talent, which we will hopefully get on the show next weekend. And next week, and this week we're going to feature an interview with a guy I think is very, very good American talent. He surprised the hell out of me last year in Indy Lights, which he's repeating this year. He's from Chicago area, and his name is David Maluka. So that's coming up after the Motorsports Mondial, so please stay tuned. World Rally Championship, Sweden, like father, like son. 21 years after Harry Rovanpera won the Swedish rally, his son Kalle took victory in this year's event, driving a Toyota Yaris. Croatia rally is the next round next month, so that's all good. Now we come to your favorite series, Le NASCAR. Man from Northern California, Kyle Larson, wins the NASCAR race in Southern California at Fontana. This track was built by Roger Penske and now belongs to the France family. This is also the place where very talented Canadian driver from British Columbia, Greg Moore, was killed in a vicious high-speed accident in the season finale. He had signed to drive for Penske for the following season, and it was that seat that went to Castro Neves. And sir, now we come to some sad news. Very familiar with this gentleman, Danny Ongais, also known as Danny on the Gas. He was the only driver from Hawaii. He was the real Hawaii 5-0 of motorsports, and I believe to this day he's the only driver from Hawaii to race at Indy 500. And his background is that he was involved in... He was in the U.S. Armed Forces, and while stationed in Europe, he got the road racing bug. Came back to Hawaii, won the motorcycle championship there, and that was in 1960. Then he also made his name in drag racing in the 60s and took some championship. He won the Daytona 24 Hours in 1979. And, you know, there was this gentleman here by the name of Ted Field who had this company called Interscope Records. You're a music man. I'm sure you know who he is. And we're talking late 80s. One of my friends, he graduated with his MBA from some place in SoCal and was working for Ted Field, one of his companies. And he called me and he says, "Have you heard of a driver named Danny Ongais?" I said, "Oh, of course." And he said, "Yeah, I joined this company and they have his pictures everywhere. Apparently he's friends with the owner." He asked me, what is he famous for? And I told him he's famous at that time, at least, for breaking legs, because he had a couple of very high-speed accidents. And one of them was at the Michigan 500, I believe, in 1985. I was watching that and it happened on the back straight. That was a wild, wild crash. So, this gentleman passed away in Southern California a few days ago due to heart failure. And, you know, he was, when it comes to the media and press, he was on the Danny Horn program. He was not interested in limelight or anything like that. So some sad news, but we do remember Danny Ongais very well. And our condolences to his family and friends. Anything you might want to add, sir?
Yeah, I mean, what a champion. Two wheels, four wheels, straight line, left turns. The guy was awesome, and he really was proud to be a Hawaiian. he was a pretty cool guy.
Well, you know, who knows? He may know Desiree. We may have to call her and say hello, listeners.
I'll talk to Penn State and see if we could arrange something.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and so now we come. Shall we do our goodie bag now?
Yes, we need a goodie bag about now.
Today's conversation is with David Malukas, a very good young American talent. His family is originally from Lithuania, one of the Baltic ex-Soviet republics, and he is based out of Chicago area. It was very nice talking to him, and I think this kid is going places. He's very young and very fast and already in IndyCar racing, so I would like to thank him for his time. And please listen, and hopefully you will enjoy the chit-chat with David Malukas. Thank you. Okay, folks, I'm here with rising American star, Mr. David Malukas. David, not the way you wanted the season to start, but how are you taking it?
Yeah, I don't know about starting this this podcast with rising star after that performance. No, I mean, it really sucks. Yeah, I wish if a crash was imminent, I wish I would have done it, you know, in practice one or practice two, you know. But I mean, these things happen, and for some reason, in the past couple seasons, I've started every year with a bang. You know, I don't know why I keep doing it, but the trend continues. However, you know, looking also in the past, we also rebound from it, and I expect to do the same this year.
Okay, great. Now, if you had not crashed, my first question was going to be: have you been to Vilnius?
Say again.
Have you been to Vilnius, capital of Lithuania?
Oh. Yes, of course. Yeah, I have been all over Lithuania in general, Vilnius, Telšiai, Palanga. I mean, it's been quite a long time since I've last been there, but no, I mean, it's a great place, lots of culture.
Okay, cool. 20 years old and already in top level of American open wheel racing. How did the first year treat you in racing?
First year of racing, like ever?
Yeah, when you started single-seater racing.
Oh, boy. Well, I started single-seaters outside of the U.S. We decided to do, you know, the European series, Middle Eastern series, you know, kind of learn away from the U.S., see that nobody sees my failures, even though still here. But no, we started in the UAE series. That was the first one. We did Dubai, Abu Dhabi. It was in Formula 4, went to ADAC in Germany, and then after that we came to America. And the first couple years were very rough. I mean, I remember I was barely able to scrape past the bottom three. But, you know, within time we kept learning, kept our head down, and now we're here. So I expect to do the same after today as well.
Okay. Now, you were very successful in karting. Why are you so afraid of making mistakes yet? I'm curious.
Yes, well, actually, karting was very good. You know, we won that X30 championship and even came again the next year in seniors and almost did it again. And throughout my whole go-kart career, you know, it was very good. But when we did that jump to single-seaters, oh boy, I mean, it was all of a sudden coming from being really good in go-karts to, like, you know, really bad in open wheel. And it is a very big change. With go-karts, there's no brake. You know, you as soon as you come into a corner, you hit the brakes, and then right after that, you hit the throttle, and, you know, just the least amount of brake time as possible. However, in car, it's different. You brake, and then you coast. You know, the longer you coast, the better it is for the car, putting more pressure on the tires and carrying more mid-corner speed. And that was kind of the hardest thing to do, but yeah, the mistakes, I mean, you know, these things happen, but yeah, I mean, there was many more that nobody saw in the UAE series and the German series.
Yeah, I'm very surprised you're saying this, because reading about your racing life, it has been very, very impressive. Now, a question for you, are you ready for the big race at the Brickyard on Memorial Day weekend?
I am, yes. I'm very excited. I mean, it's going to be good to get onto a normal course as well. I mean, now I need a redemption from street courses, which I'll expect to do at Long Beach. But no, I am very excited. I mean, it's a dream that everybody wants, you know, coming into IndyCar, and it's been a dream of mine since I was a kid. So I'm excited to finally be able to fulfill it.
And how did you get the racing bug? Is it coming from mom and dad or on your own?
Well, I'm a first generation for racing in my family and also being in the U.S. But my dad was always a big racing fan when he was younger, you know, but however, in the Soviet Union, well, occupied by the Soviet Union, Lithuania, he never had the opportunity, never had the chances to pursue what he wanted. And he ended up coming over to America, and fast forward a couple of years, I was born, and he kind of lived his dream through me. And, I mean, he did a bit of Corvette racing in Road America. That's why I tend to call it my home track, but definitely the parents, they have a bit of racing in them. It carried on to me, and together we sparked our interest into the series.
Fantastic. Now, if you had a choice, what will you prefer, winning the Indy 500 or the IndyCar Championship?
So I got this question asked, I'd say a couple months ago, like at the end of Indy Lights season. I remember I said the IndyCar Championship. However, now seeing the history and watching many, many videos and doing a lot of learning about the 500, I mean, the 500 is very special. I mean, it's going to be tough to say until I experience it myself being one of the Indy drivers, but I think the Indy 500 would be the special moment. Everybody knows about it. It's the biggest race, I think, in the world. So, yeah, I mean, definitely Indy 500 for sure.
Have you ever been to the race day Indy 500?
Yes, I have. We did the Indy Lights, the Freedom 100. I actually had that big incident then. But I know the year following, we ended up getting a free pass, and I watched the start of the race. And let's just say it's very loud.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, you talk about loud. Wish you had, maybe you were there or maybe you were too young. When the Formula One cars were racing, it was incredible. But I will tell you something about the importance of Indy 500. If there are 20 races in the season, David Malukas wins Indy 500, Colton Herta wins the other 19 races. Guess who's going on the Tonight Show?
Yeah, that's also one of the factors. That's the thing, you know, the championship is definitely very special. I mean, it shows that you were very consistent, always at speed and always keeping your mind cool, you know, making sure that you're always getting a top finish. But the Indy 500, it is a very special race, very long, and it's very different from anything that there's any other race, I mean, in the world. There's nothing like it. So if you can get a win there, everybody knows about it.
IndyCar has a nice blend of oval and road racing tracks. You mentioned Road America, which I love, and street circuits also. Where do you feel you are strongest?
Oof, well, since I did all my European testing, you know, before I went to the Road to Indy series, you know, we did the ADAC series in Germany and also the UAE. The tracks there tend to be, you know, have that European style to it. So any track that's like those, you know, I mean, Indy GP, very simple track, however, very hard to get that last bit of tenth that will make you go from, you know, P15 to P2. Road America as well. I mean, long track, very European style, long corners. I'd say those two. Those two would be like the two that I'm most expected to be decent.
Now, speaking of European racing, how come you did not pursue like European Formula 3 or Formula 2? What made you decide to stay here? Which I think you did the right thing, but just want to hear your reasoning.
Well, I mean, there's two reasons. First of all, I was getting homesick. You know, I love being in the U.S. and
oh, were you missing cheeseburgers like Michael Andretti?
Yes, I was missing the cheeseburgers, the hot dogs. No, I mean, it's just, you know, also being away from home. And it was getting to me. You know, I remember I lived in England for 3 months while I was doing the German series. And it takes a toll mentally, and you know, being away from all my friends, all my family. But also the whole goal, even when we left, was we wanted to come back. But the main reason, the one takeaway, is in Europe, what I realized is if you do good, if you go, you know, let's say win the F4 championship or win a race, etc., all they do over there is give you a nice high five and then say, see you next year. When the Rota Indy Series here in the U.S., they give you two high fives and also a lot of money to continue your adventures forward. So that's when I knew that this was the right series to be in.
No, you did the right thing. Okay, last year you did a great job pushing for the championship till the end. In only the second race of the season, you did a Verizon triple play, pole, fastest lap, and victory, and I was there. You surprised a lot of people, myself included. Did you surprise yourself also?
Wait, where was this at?
In the Indy Lights?
Yes.
You won in your second race, right?
Of course, yeah.
In Barber?
Yes, that, okay, yes, I... Well, see, see, from Barber, I forget there's two races. You know, I remember the first one where we crashed.
So I think it's, like you said, it's a good omen. You crash and then you bounce back strongly.
Exactly, you know, from it's there, working. Yeah, we crash and then the next day we won by, you know, quite a few miles. You know, we had a big lead. Yeah, I mean... I think that was a great awakening, you know. Well, what people saw was back in 2019, you know, the team was fresh. We had many people from Europe. The ovals we struggled so much with, and Indy Lights, it really showed and proved. And even I was still very young and immature. And then going into the next season, we already were in HMD Motorsports. The whole team was 100% turnover, new mechanics, new engineers. And we did that one practice session here in St. Pete, and we put it on pole. But then the season got canceled. And I think, actually, that getting that one extra year for me, being in my teen years, it helped me mature even more. So then when we came in last year for the Indy Lights season, that's when I think we were able to really show our true power.
7 wins, 16 podiums in 20 races, second in the championship, only 13 points behind. It's very impressive. What were the highs and lows for you?
Oh, highs. Well, it's really easy to remember the lows. You know, the two lows was the first race at Barber and Detroit. But seeing Detroit, we were smart. I did it in practice back then. So, but we had two incidents then. But the highs, I'd say, were actually Mid-Ohio, the final race of the season, and the Indy GP. It was, I think, the second race in Indy, and we went into turn one, first lap. I was in the lead, had a clear gap, like, and we definitely had the pace, and I locked up the front right. And then the whole race, I had to take care of that front right while Toby Sauer was in my rear. And then we actually crossed the start finish line with me barely ahead. So that was an amazing race. And also Mid-Ohio, in the rain, it was actually, I think, the only rain race that we had all season. And that track is, let's just say, it's very tough in the rain. And we managed to perform. I had a bit of an incident in turn one, flew off, but came from last to second. And that was really fun to me. I really enjoyed that.
Now, racing is very safe these days. But, you know, when a machine is traveling at 200 miles per hour, there is some element of danger. Any concern from your mom about you becoming a professional racing driver?
Oh, I mean, of course. You know, if they wouldn't be parents if they weren't. No, of course, my mom. My dad, he says he's not, but I can see when I go on track, he gets quite nervous about it, too. You know, they know it's a passion of mine, and they're going to support me all the way. And, you know, I'm grateful that, you know, they care about my wealth and safety. But the one good thing is that the IndyCar is very, very safe. I mean, we just had a big incident there in St. Pete in our first race here, and that was a big impact, like huge. And I was perfectly fine. You know, I hopped out of that like nothing happened. So I feel very safe myself.
Before reaching IndyCars, you raced in 4 different series. Which one helped you most in developing as a driver?
Which series helped me most? Well, see, I mean, that's tough to say.
You put it this way, where you faced a lot of competition, but you stood up to it pretty well.
So the best that prepared me, especially to where I am now in IndyCar, was Indy Lights. I mean, it's the one step below. The car is very tough to drive. I think even harder to drive than this IndyCar. And, of course, the IndyCar has its characteristics, but that series as a whole was tough. I mean, we did 2 years. The first year was, wow, so tough to try to even get into the top three out of 8 cars. You know, we were pretty bad. But then coming in for the second year in 2021, the battles that me and Kyle had were incredible. You know, we forced each other to push 120%. You know, 1 year ago here at St. Pete, me and Kyle were touching walls, you know, trying to just be a little bit ahead of each other. So Yeah, definitely last year Indy Lights was the biggest growth.
Have you maintained a friendship with him off the track?
Yes, of course, yeah. I'm hyping him up. You know, I saw him after qualifying. I saw that he made it into Q2, and I got all excited and gave him a big hug. He didn't seem too fond of it, but, I mean, the friendship is still there.
Oh, that's good. In 2020, you raced in Formula Regional. Survey says in 17 races, you were on the podium in 15 races. What happened in Virginia and at Sebring?
So, yeah, wow, I forgot, Sebring was actually the first race where we were in the lead, and we actually had a really big gap. I mean, it was like almost a straightaway. I mean, the win was sold, you know, all I had to do was just finish, and ended up coming out the last corner and hit the Sebring bumps. They did me dirty, and I ended up losing the car. It was very unfortunate, and then we had to continue that race, and I just felt so bad. But, and then in Virginia, man, was it hot, and those cars were struggling. It was so hot, and we had a yellow flag. Everybody backed up. Luckily, the leader was fine, which was Linus at the time. He was fine because he had his own clean air, but being behind all these people, so much heat built up in the car, and we were having ECU failures right when it went green. So I was ended up being stuck in third gear throughout the whole, you know, last three laps after it went green again. And it was really funny. I mean, I was screaming on the radio, I'm like, I can't get out of third gear, and you'll just hear me coming down the front straight, just brrr. It was so funny. But you know, we finished that race all in third gear, you know, made sure I didn't stall when in the slow speed corners, and hit the limiter all the way down the straight. And it actually, it gave out as soon as I pulled into the pits. It was a really interesting race.
Now, two questions about Formula One. One, once you're a very talented driver, you know it, and I'm very confident you will establish yourself very well in a few years. Once you establish as a professionally paid IndyCar driver, and there was a call, would you prefer a top ride in IndyCar racing or back of the bus Formula One operation?
Oof, see, this is a question that's very tough. I mean, F1 is F1. So, I mean, if you get
it,
yeah, of course, all the time. You know, the recent battle with Hamilton and Verstappen, it was amazing. And then they did the show, and it sparked interest, especially for many people in the U.S. And that race, I actually think, had like almost 20 million more viewers than the Super Bowl. I mean, that last race, it really showed the event that they had. But no, I mean, F1 is so special. You know, it's above and beyond anything. And you know, if you get the offer, I mean, it's quite tough to say no. I feel like if a driver says no, he's probably lying or has some sort of issue with sponsorship. But no, I mean, if you get the offer, you'd be stupid to say no. That's about that.
You know, Brian Herta once tested a Minardi, which was the back of the bus operation, and his comment was, the worst Formula One car is better than the best Indy car. And we at F1 Weekly love Formula One. Speaking of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, both as a fan and as a driver, what was your call on what happened there on the final lap, the decision by you know who?
So I mean, I didn't look too much into it. You know, I watched the race and I was starstruck looking at the screen. I couldn't believe what happened. It's really unfortunate for the way I think it ended. I mean, if you put yourself in Hamilton's position, you know, you'd be like, wow, I've just been stolen a championship there. But you put yourself in Verstappen's position and you're like, well, I think that was the right decision to make. And it's really tough, you know, it's tough to say, did he switch the rules, you know, right before, you know, that the race ended? You know, are the rule books, you know, meant to, you know, stay formatted, or do you just change it whenever you want? And I didn't look into too much of if he actually changed the rule just that last second, but you know, at the end of the day, I respect both sides. You know, I look at Hamilton's side, I'd be like, yeah, if I was a driver, I'd understand. But if I looked at the official side, they wanted to go racing. And, you know, that's what they did.
Okay, I greatly appreciate your time. We have a global audience. Would you like to have a message for them and tell them about your website, social media?
Of course. I mean, well, racing really wouldn't be racing without the fans. So I'd like to thank everyone and every one of you guys. I mean, you guys are the ones that's keeping me pushing. I got all the good messages just recently. I looked at my phone, you know, after this incident. So thank you to every single one of you. Make sure to continue following me. Websites, davidmaloukas.com. Twitter, Maloukas David. Instagram, David Maloukas. Very simple on all of them. But yeah, I mean, continue following. I'll make sure to bounce up from here. I set a really easy baseline to beat for myself. So I see you guys at the next race.
Thank you very much. All the best.
David, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Keep up the good work, Nash. Let's hope that Alpine will get their fire retardant out before any damage happens to further wanderings with Fernando. Now we wait for Bahrain and to see if there's no more porpoising.
Yes, sir. We will see how it works out. And hopefully the next test session will be on TV. So that will be interesting. Oh, by the way, if anybody is interested on Formula, you know, like Netflix is releasing their series, Formula One on their website, on the video section, they have these documentaries called Chasing the Dream or something like that. These are feature stories on Formula Two drivers. I watched some of it today. Highly recommend it if anybody is interested.
Keep up the good work, Nas. Everybody, let's hang in and keep our fingers crossed for Fernando, but it looks like it's going to be an LCH year. So let's just stay grounded and focus on the more important things in life. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.